AccuWeather forecast, cloudy, chance for some showers, high around 60 by the lake, maybe 70 degrees further inland. Haribo is a German candy maker, and it's chosen Kenosha County, Pleasant Prairie specifically, is the location for its first North American manufacturing facility. The big announcement was made in Madison with Governor Walker on hand. WRJN News talked with Kenosha County Executive Jim Cruiser on his way back from Madison and that news conference, and he said that access to transportation, that was an important part to the company.
But they also looked at the type of community we were and how connected we were with each other and with the state of Wisconsin and working on having their main flagship plant here in Kenosha County.
Some 400 living wage jobs to go with that production opportunity. According to Cruiser, it's to be completed by the year 2020. It'll represent one of the largest investments in new operations by an overseas company in Wisconsin history. The former Elks Club building in downtown Kenosha, known lately as Heritage House, that is still targeted for a salvage project, trying to turn it into a boutique hotel. Madison architectural firm Gorman & Company, which is also now working on Racine's Machinery Row project, giving revised design plans to a couple of city commissions last night. Alderman and Historic Preservation Commission Chairman Jan Mikowski noted, a lot of local folks have some pretty strong feelings about that building for a lot of reasons.
And I'm really very, very delighted that it has a strong chance of coming back. And I think the Gorman Group, with the idea of creating a boutique hotel, I mean, if I had to come up with an idea, what do we do with the old Elks Club? I couldn't come up with a better after-use for this thing.
The project repeatedly, of course, delayed because of problems nailing down the complicated financing package. Meanwhile, the Kenosha Plan Commission has told Gorman it needs to purchase the property by the end of June, while agreeing to amend the conditional use permit reflecting recent financial changes. Within the next few months, the village of Mount Pleasant may get a couple of big-titled employees hired. Next Wednesday afternoon, the Personnel Committee has a closed-door meeting on the positions of Administrator and Human Resources Director. Open records requests are being made now on the Administrator candidates because Interim Administrator Tim Zarzecki tells the Journal Times there are 5 candidates, and that qualifies under state law. For the HR job, he indicates there are 13 candidates. That HR job is new. The committee agenda lists a return to open session next Wednesday. Whether any recommendation will be announced, that's another story. It's an effort to solve a cold case homicide. Racine police putting up a video on Facebook seeking information regarding the killing of 37-year-old James Norris, shot and killed March the 25th, 2016, while making a food delivery in the 3900 block of Green Street.
Just made a delivery for Super Steak and Lemonade where he was employed. Mr. Norris was a hard-working man who worked 3 jobs to help support his family.
At Sergeant Adam Alacara says Norris's family is now seeking closure. It's believed there were multiple witnesses.
There is credible information that there were several people in and around the apartment building that may have witnessed the incident.
With the 1-year anniversary coming up tomorrow, a $2,000 reward is being offered for information regarding that case. Contact the Racine Police Department and Investigator Bielkowski at 635-7778. Father and daughter died within a month of each other recently. Their lives are going to be celebrated with a joint funeral service tomorrow in Racine. 94-year-old Joseph Patrick Collentine, known to his friends and family as Monk, passed away at home in his sleep February the 25th. 64-year-old Sheila Collentine Ryan died earlier this month at her home in Spokane, Washington. The massive Christian burial for both tomorrow morning, 10:30, St. Richard's Catholic Church in Racine, with the visitation beginning at 9. The Marsh Meredith and Acklam Funeral Home is serving the family. Richard Sicenis of Racine, at the age of 91, passed away on March the 21st at the Ridgewood Care Center. He taught 6th grade in Racine Unified for 30 years. The massive Christian burial, Saturday morning, 11 o'clock, St. Joseph's Catholic Church on Erie Street in Racine. Friends and family can meet starting at 5 o'clock this afternoon at the Marsh Meredith and Acklam Funeral Home up until 7 o'clock and then Saturday morning at the church beginning at 10:30. June Palmerville of Racine at the age of 77 passed away on Sunday, March the 5th at her residence. A memorial service will be taking place this coming Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock at Olympia Brown Unitarian Universalist Church on College Avenue in downtown Racine. The Marsh Meredith and Acklam Funeral Home is serving the family. Albert Redd of Racine, at the age of 72, passed away on March the 17th at St. Luke's Medical Center. Private funeral services were held with help from the Marsh Meredith and Acklam Funeral Home. And Angeline Nair of Racine, at the age of 95, she passed away at the Villa on March the 18th. Her funeral services coming up Monday morning, 11:30, Trinity Lutheran Church on Geneva Street in Racine. Friends and relatives can meet with the family Sunday at the Marsh Meredith and Acklam Funeral Home from 2 p.m. till 5 p.m., then again Monday at the church beginning at 11 a.m. Think 4th of July and fireworks. And in the city of Burlington, they're going to be held as usual, not over Echo Lake or launch from the lake. During this week's council meeting, the fire chief, Alan Babe, said moving the launch point, as they talked about in the past, that's a complicated issue based on discussions he's had with Five Star Fireworks.
We looked at the Echo Lake Park, different areas where we thought possibly we could do it from land, and then the close proximity to our pavilion and the different structures we have on the Echo Lake Park area. And then we drove up and down Grove Street, potential Navy site, which we really felt there was none. And then we talked about being able to shoot the fireworks over Echo Lake itself on a couple of barges.
The chief said that using barges as a platform, that's out, at least this year, because a special crew is needed and they're booked this summer. Launching closer to the water, well, that would mean a smaller display.
We're going to go down all the way to 3-inch mortars. If you look at what they're proposing in their contract with us, there are quite a few mortars that are 4-inch, 5-inch, some 6-inch. It involves the grand finale, some other stages within their presentation, if you will. So I opted to tell them, well, we don't want to do that. I don't think we want to go down in the size of mortars, right? That means that they don't go up as high and we don't get a lot of oohs and ahs.
The chief said that talks with Five Star ought to begin early for 2018 if the goal is to launch fireworks from Echo Lake. He said it was also probably going to cost a little bit more to use barges on top of the current $10,000 contract cost. Kenosha Circuit Court Judge Mary Kay Wagner to receive a Lifetime Achievement Honor later today at the Susan B. Anthony Women of Influence Awards in Kenosha. That'll be at 5 p.m. at Marina Shores. The award given to a Kenosha County resident who believes in equity, gives of herself so that others might learn, grows and succeeds, and provides inspiration through leadership. Guida Brown heads up the SBA Awards program. The nonprofit group says that Judge Wagner has devoted herself to public service from working as a school teacher, then as the Kenosha County Clerk, a state representative, and now as a circuit court judge, and has showed women and girls that they can achieve their goals through hard work, dedication, and passion. Big recruitment effort underway by Milwaukee's Fire and Police Commission trying to attract new officers, holding recruitment sessions almost every day along with billboards and flyers advertising the fact the city needs new people in the ranks. In fact, there's going to be an open house tomorrow from noon to 4 p.m. at the Safety Academy on North Tetonia Avenue. Somewhat of a local connection with the tragic deaths of a police detective and three others in the Marathon County town of Weston. The chief for the Everest Metro Police Force is Wally Sparks. He spent 23 years with the Mount Pleasant Police Department, said 40-year-old Detective Sergeant Jason Weiland was killed in response to an apartment complex where a shooting suspect was later taken into custody.
Memorial Fund for the Weiland family has been established through Inner City State Bank, located at 2900 Schofield Avenue in the village of Weston. Donations for the family can be directed to Inner City State Bank under the name of Weiland Memorial Fund.
Chief Sparks left Mount Pleasant as a lieutenant for the chief's job in Weston, struggled at times during the press conference to get through it in reference to his slain officer. Governor Walker ordering flags to half staff out of respect for Detective Sergeant Jason Weiland. Friends, former coaches, former athletes, remembering Jim Koch, the one-time UW Parkside wrestling coach who died from major trauma suffered when hit by a vehicle a week ago while out for a morning run in St. Louis. Even though he had retired in 2011, after 41 years as a coach, Koch was still following the sport in St. Louis for the NCAA Division I Championships. Current Parkside wrestling coach Greg Lewis, who served as an assistant to Koch for 16 years, said that the program was built on his back. Longtime and retired Parkside soccer coach Rick Kilp said that Jim Koch, he lived the job of a wrestling coach. The National Wrestling Hall of Fame gave Koch a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2003. He's in national, state, and local athletic halls of fame. He coached 14 national champion wrestlers, 128 All-Americans, 80 academic All-Americans. Jim Koch's funeral services have yet to be announced. A third and final public meeting on Racine's Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan was held last evening at Festival Hall. Participants encouraged to give their thoughts on short and long-term goals. Three main areas were focused on: development of bike lanes and pathways, intersection improvements for bikers and walkers, and also signage. Sarah Gaskell with the Wisconsin Bicycle Federation acted as a consultant for the process and says recommendations from last night's gathering are going to be used to formulate the final plan.
We'll take back all of this, put it in front of the advisory council, make sure that everything that's recommended is covered, and if there's something new that pops up through this process, we will incorporate it. Then it's my job to sort of take all the information and put the plan document together.
Dottie K. Bowersox, the city's health administrator, says then the process of getting the plan adopted by the Common Council, that'll begin, followed by the implementation recommendations.
So then we need to work with the various departments within the city, DPW, city development, for example, to make sure that the ideas, the recommendations are incorporated into the planning. And then also we need to make sure that either through grants or through city funding, that money is available and appropriated.
The current timetable calling for the Common Council to adopt the plan by around June. Racine's prominent role in the Underground Railroad to be the focus of a program later today titled The Racine Underground Railroad, 1850s Freedom Trail Revisited. It'll take place at 5:30 p.m. inside the Racine Heritage Museum at 7th and Main Streets. Keynote speaker, Milton Dockery, professor and chair of the Department of History at MATC. He'll talk about the background of the Underground Railroad. Between 1842 and 1861, more than 1,000 escaped slaves were helped to freedom by Wisconsin residents, but there's not really that much information available due to the secrecy of that work. In addition, music and the Underground Railroad will be presented by Dr. James Kinchin. He's a professor and the director of choral activities at UW Parkside. The admission is free. A reception will follow that presentation. Salmon Unlimited in Racine going to be using a portion of Pershing Park for the 2017 Salmonorama fishing event, July the 12th through the 25th. Not over by Festival Hall, where activities have been held in the recent past. The group maintains it was mostly cost, but during the council meeting, soon to be retiring City Administrator Tom Friedel explained how cost related to availability and a committed use on part of that time frame, the Ironman event also factored in. Plus, it boils down to the best use for the Festival Hall site.
You have a paying customer that brings a high-quality program to the city, it's pretty difficult to turn your back on that and say, we're just going to change things. And then the long-term 14-day commitment makes it even more difficult. There was also this year a booking already on the 22nd of the month, which is another date that they had. And I think that will continue to occur because hopefully, our goal is to fill up Festival Hall every weekend.
As for claims that Salmon Unlimited would have been looking at about a $45,000 cost for using the festival site those 2 weeks, Friedel said, quote, I can tell you for a fact it was nowhere near that amount, unquote, had the days been available. So now Salmonorama will be taking place just at Pershing Park. Our AccuWeather forecast is coming up. I'm Tom Carco, WRJN News.